You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
Thank you for tuning into the podcast from the Foundational Questions Institute. With this edition, we're trying something new.
That's right. Just for this podcast, my cat Puffy has stepped in as guest editor and has chosen the items to be featured. So we may have more emphasis than usual on feline-related news, including quantum cats and pigeons. So, Puffy, do you want to introduce the first topic?
Okay, Brendan, can you translate that?
Sure, that's Puffy explaining that the first item is based on a new experiment that was published in Nature in July, which is related to the paradox of Schrödinger's cat. You know, where you shut a cat in a box with some poison that may or may not be released depending on whether some quantum event occurs. So Puffy's basically saying no one would ever dare try that with him.
Right, okay. Well, we should add that it's just a thought experiment. So, if this quantum event occurs, let's say if a radioactive atom in the box decays, then the poison is released and the cat...
Puffy, stay calm.
Then the poison is released and the cat dies. If the radioactive atom does not decay, then the cat lives. But the quantum catch is that, according to quantum mechanics, until you open the box, the radioactive atom exists in what is known as a superposition. It's both decayed and not decayed at the same time.
Which suggests the cat is both alive and dead. The standard story goes that it's only when you open the box that the radioactive atom collapses into one state, which in turn determines the cat's fate, happy or sad. But in a new experiment, physicists have shown that you can actually track the cat's fate while it is in the box, potentially even allowing you to steer the outcome.
Of course, they've not done this experiment with cats, but rather with superconducting quantum circuits that, like Schrödinger's cat, can exist as a superposition of two mutually distinct states, in this case, in two different energy levels. I spoke with one of the theoretical physicists behind the experiment, Andrew Jordan of Rochester University, New York. He explained how special kinds of measurements could be used to track the transitions between quantum states, and how this technique may one day be used to control quantum systems.
And so this was a collaboration between my group at the University of Rochester doing the theory and Irfan Siddiqui's group at the University of California at Berkeley doing the experiments. And the experiment concerns a particular kind of quantum system. It's a superconducting quantum system. So that means a little bit like your Schrödinger cat, it's actually a fairly big object. It's not like an atom or a molecule or something like that. So the experiment is quite an important experiment, I think, because it shows really for the first time the ability to do these continuous measurements on a single quantum system while it's actually trying to move around. All right. So what they do is they have this quantum superconducting qubit. They give it a name. They call it a transmon. And the way they measure it is they put it in a microwave box. So this is like the microwave oven you have at home. You warm up your food in, but it's a little bit smaller, but not that much smaller. It's on a table. And, of course, this is all done at low temperature. But what they do is they're able to send in microwave signals, and these microwaves interact with this essentially charged degree of freedom in this superconducting element. And the light comes back out of the experiment, and then they're able, by looking at some properties of that light, they're looking at some phase shift that they're able to amplify, they can then essentially infer what's going on with this quantum coherent system.
The big question there is that, you know, whenever we talk about these quantum systems, we're always told that, you know, as soon as you look at them, as soon as you measure them, you know, you completely sort of destroy the quantumness and they just, you know, the cat collapses, it becomes either dead or alive. So, you know, you're talking about something where you're kind of monitoring something that's happening. So how are you able to carry out measurements without destroying the thing that you're trying to measure?
Yeah, so it's a very good question. So it turns out this picture of, which we learn in sort of textbook quantum mechanics, you measure it and then it projects it, it's either alive or dead, it's in one eigenstate or the other. This is only one kind of limit of a whole different range of measurement options people have. And these experiments are some of the first to really look at basically saying, we don't have to do that all at once, collapse it into alive or dead. We can continuously monitor what's going on with the quantum state. And as we do that, we can have a theory that describes how the quantum state is changing a subject to that looking at it. And so, in fact, you can actually watch the Schrodinger cat eventually start to die or to come back alive or anything in between. It's now a continuous process.
And is it fair to say that, you know, if you do these kind of very delicate, very subtle measurements where you're trying to get a little bit of information about what the system is like, you know, rather than a very dramatic measurement, which would just kind of collapse the system into dead or into alive in one go, that there's some kind of trade-off so that perhaps you're not disturbing the system as much as you would with one of those brutal measurements, but maybe you're not getting back as kind of accurate information, or maybe the information is a little bit more uncertain.
Yes, so what you're saying is correct. You don't get perfect information about what the state is, but you get somehow hints, you get partial information.
What sort of results did you walk away with from this experiment? What did you learn by doing this that you didn't know beforehand?
We said, suppose you prepare the quantum state in some initial quantum state, and then imagine we measure for some time t that you give me, and then I want to imagine ending up in some final quantum state that you can also choose. And the question we are interested in is, we said, what's the most likely way the system changes so it can go from A to B in some time t? And the way I formulated that is similar to many other things that occur in physics that have a similar kind of flavor to them. So one example is Fermat's principle of least time. And that's the statement in classical optics that says, if I have a source of light and I have a receiver of light, what path does the light take to go between source and receiver? And the answer is that it optimizes some quantity, which is the time between these two points. And so what we formulated now is, we formulated a kind of quantum version of that. We kind of have a quantum principle of least action. And so what the Siddiqui team was able to do is they were able to check that theory. They were able to run many, many realizations of this experiment as the system was changing. So in addition to being able to monitor the system continuously, they were also able to drive it continuously. So the system was always trying to turn, for example, from the ground state to the excited state and the excited state to the ground state while it was being monitored. And this is a completely new experimental achievement on their part. And what they found in this Nature article is that you have very beautiful agreement between their data and our theoretical analysis.
You sort of described how the team have really done something quite new and different in the way that they're able to kind of monitor and also, in some sense, steer the system that they were looking at. Is that something that will have applications down the line, either in, I don't know, quantum computing or perhaps in terms of looking at chemical reactions?
So one element of quantum technology that's active now is this field of quantum control, being able to push quantum systems where you want them to go and when you want them to go do that. And so one of the interesting things that our theory predicts, not only does it predict the most likely quantum trajectory that does that, but it also predicts the most likely detector output. So how does the detector respond in its most likely way that accomplishes that particular task that goes from quantum state A to quantum state B in some time? And so you can think about that as suggestive of a new kind of active quantum control. So you can imagine trying to engineer your environment or your detector to be able to respond in such a way such that it pushes the state on average where you want it to go. So that is, I would say, is the most immediate sort of application or next step anyway of this research.
That was Andrew Jordan talking with Zia.